Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so we ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Pop Life Podcast today is, I think I know. 18th.
Yep.
Yeah. My friend Kim. You know Kim Cooper Nye?
Yeah, it's her birthday, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's her birthday. You know Kim Cooper, bro, right? Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. It's her birthday. We're Libra.
Shout out to her. Happy birthday. Today was also my nephew's birthday.
The word? The one to be at the house sometime?
Nah, these from Carolina.
Oh, okay.
These are country nephews.
Okay, good. Yeah. So, we coming up there.
Yeah. All that.
Yeah, you give us tickets to go see Jay-Z.
I gave him a little couple dollars to put in his pocket.
Yeah,
so he called me.
Exactly.
Thanks, Uncle Sean.
Thanks, Uncle Sean. About to go get these J's. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's everybody doing?
Good.
I'm good. Yeah. I got a really bad head cold. But
it's that time of year.
It is that time of year.
Like that weather changing, and you know, it's weird. It's that weird weather changing type of joint. So I want to start off by saying giving a shout out to my alma mater, Morgan State University.
Yeah, I saw you was on the yard.
Yeah, it was first time at homecoming in 17 years.
Wow. So what motivated you to go this time?
Well, it was the 150th anniversary of the school in general. Us and Howard started 150 years ago, like pretty much the same time, obviously the same. I mean, almost like to the same day, because Howard's homecoming is this weekend. It's also their 150th. So I wanted to go for that. And, you know, I guess I was feeling just a tad bit nostalgic. I hadn't been down there forever. And a lot of my friends and stuff a lot of us had stopped going, but they started to go back. And, you know, I was like, let me go down there and see some folk. You know what I'm saying? Like, just get to that space where, like, you know, oh, so-and-so passed away, or so-and-so, you know what I mean? It's like, let me go see some people, not take it for granted that they'll just be there every year, you know? So
right.
I drove down on Friday. And you know, came back on Sunday, and it was good. It was, I mean, the campus since I've been there has expanded like immensely. Like it's like going from like a Kia to a Rolls Royce. It's like,
oh wow.
Yeah. They did so much building and like, you know, so expanded the campus and dorms and new buildings and everything. And, you know, new everything basically since I've been down there. And, you know, it was definitely nice to see people I hadn't seen in a long time. It was good. It was good. It was a good trip. You know, will I go next year? I don't know. Yeah.
Cause like, how often do you really need to do it?
I mean, hey, but that's the thing about, especially on the black school tip, as y'all know, like people go, there's people that go every year.
Yeah, there's people that go every year. But like, you know, I mean, you can go once every couple years.
Yeah. I mean, folks, they, it's like the annual thing. Everybody goes, but like, it was cool though. Like I said, got to see a lot of people I hadn't seen in a long time and, mm-hmm. You know, it was good. It was good. I've been in Baltimore in a minute, you know, so it was a good time. It was a good time had by all.
He was reminiscing things.
Definitely was reminiscing, you know, like, oh, there's the dorms and, you know, my old college roommate was there. So we hung out and, you know, it was good. So, happy 150th anniversary to Morgan State University. And we won the game.
Oh, that's always good. Okay.
Yeah, well, we beat Savannah State. You know, they both teams is terrible. I think we 1-5 and they 0-6. So it's, you know, whatever.
Somebody had to win.
But you know, what's interesting. I mean, I don't know if you know, like, it was interesting. Like, the Deltas, I didn't see any, barely any Deltas on the yard. and no alphas. So I'm assuming maybe they must be suspended.
They might be suspended. I mean, it's really possible. There's no way for me to possibly keep up with every
chapter.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely possible.
Yeah, because, you know, obviously it's a big, those are two big, you know, two of the biggest fraternities and sororities, and it was like literally none of them on the campus. You know, you can see the jackets and all that. I was like, oh, they must have did something.
But, yeah, they might be off the yard.
It was good. You know, telling stories, telling lies. It was fun, you know. How was your weekend?
What did I even do this weekend? I forgot already. What was this weekend?
You ain't do nothing.
You ain't do shit.
Miss Naima.
I totally ain't do nothing.
You got your thread. You probably spent all day Saturday getting your thread together.
Oh yeah, I spent my entire weekend on that fucking music thread. That's what the fuck I did. That thing was long as hell. You barely left a marathon.
Barely left the daggone house.
No, I did. I was out in Long Island Saturday.
Well, that don't count. You just went to the house. You just stayed in the house out there.
I did, but you know, whatever.
Shit.
Well, whatever. I want to do a
new music thing real quick because a couple albums came out.
Jhené
Aiko came out with a new record, dropped kind of out of the sky, called Trip. And I'm not necessarily a big Jhené Aiko fan, but I actually really like this album. The album is about her taking an LSD trip, weed and LSD trip, and kind of going into her psyche. And she talks a lot about, you know, her brother. She had a brother who passed of cancer a few years ago. He was very young when he passed cancer. And so the album is kind of like her going on this kind of journey. The psychedelic kind of journey. So it's a very conceptual album, but I like it. Again, I wasn't a huge, you know, Jhené fan for the other records, but I really like this one.
Does she talk about like the story of her marriage of like a month and a half?
Yes. With Big Sean? Yes. Yes.
Okay.
She says, I'm not quoting verbatim, but she says on the record that the marriage was really just based on them both being drug addicts. It's like, yo, like.
Oh, she was like that. Okay.
Oh yeah. She's very raw on this album. And it ain't like no, riddly kind of let me figure out what really means. Like she's coming straight forward. And she's like, yeah, we was both on drugs. We both was getting high. And once the drugs wore off, I realized like this was bullshit and I didn't want to be with you. We was just connected by the drugs. No, she addresses. Wow. Yeah, she addresses everything. Big Sean's on like 3 or 4 records. Nah, she addresses it all. And then, this cat named Brent Faiyaz, dropped an album. He's a cat. Y'all know the song Crew by Goldlink?
I don't know. Is new or old? New or older?
It's newish. You've heard it before, trust me.
Probably.
He sings on that, but he dropped an album and that's super dope, kind of some like, you know, Frank Ocean-ish type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I suggest that for the people too. And then the group Division, who signed to Drake's OVO label, dropped their second album, as well, over the weekend. The album is cool. Like it didn't really do much growth. So I don't know if I'll suggest
that. They're a group? What kind of group?
Division is two guys. It's a guy named 1985 who's a producer. He produces a lot of stuff for Drake. He produced like Hotline Bling and a lot of Drake's hits he actually produced, and is a singer, a guy who really sings like almost like in a Maxwell-ish type of thing, a lot of falsetto. Guy really got an amazing voice, and the production is really good, but it's just very samey. So it's kind of like, you know, one long song, you know what I'm saying? So but I just want to let the people know, like, you know, going out there and get you some new records, and your boy Chris Brown dropping soon, so I know Sean going to pick that up immediately.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's crazy, man, because he's actually one of the last fucking singers, man. Like, they're not really
a lot left. Like, he doesn't even do it that much anymore. Not for real, for real.
But what I'm saying is like when you hear him sing live or you hear him fucking around on IG and shit like that.
Yeah,
he can actually
really
sing.
Remind you, like, no, this nigga can really like he ain't gonna be third tenor, my nigga. He
going to lead.
He can lead. He can step out vocals, my nigga. No matter what era you put him in, like he can go. But then he's a fucking, you know, he does the Chris Brown shit, and then you're like, master. Okay.
And by the way, this album he's dropping has 40 songs on it.
Wait, 40? Why?
40, because he's Ooh. Just...
Why? He's That's just, a mixtape. Why? I don't understand.
Because he just has, I guess he just was like, no, I'm lying, excuse me, it actually has 45 songs.
Nobody's listening to that. Who said that was okay? No, seriously. Who's listening to 45 songs?
He's basically giving you 4 albums.
How do you even decide what the single is? How do you even price that shit? Like, I don't know why the label, no, for real. I don't know why the label even let you do that, because first of all, you cannot do a hard, not set up. I gotta be a label person for a second. First of all, you can't even put that on CD because
but they're not really CDs.
I know, but still,
everything's like, streaming, so there's no, so the pricing is not, it's not, the pricing is not, you're, I'm not, you're not wrong.
But I know, I'm not thinking about Chris's current fan base, but no.
It's not that. It's that everything is streaming now.
I know.
So you can put as many songs on as you want because they're looking at it as the more songs he puts out, the more songs that will stream.
Well, that's fair, but there's still...
And there'll be a limited run of physical, I'm sure, very
limited. Yeah, but you're still tied to his, I'm sure his contract is still 10 songs per album. Why would you give that many songs away?
Right.
Like, you're ultimately you're giving away 35 free songs to a $1 billion company.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're ultimately saying, here are 35 free songs where you just space, like, this is, like, all the greats sort of took that blueprint. Oh, I'm not giving you all this shit.
Right.
I got 30 records. I'm going to give you 12 on this one. You'll get an EP or some other shit. You know what I'm saying? I'll space it out.
Or parcel them out. 4 albums.
Yeah,
like I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, he could definitely have parceled them out. Like, all right, I'm gonna give you these now.
Yeah, I don't know what
down the mob. I'm put whatever.
Yeah. I don't know what the math is behind it, but I know there's. I hit the thing on Apple Music to pre-order it or whatever, and it's 45 songs.
Nobody needs that. And there's no way if you're putting out 45 songs, 7 of those are probably good.
Yeah, I'm gonna fight my way through it at some point, you know. But I'm sure.
Jeff, one of your artists comes to you and like, my nigga, let's put all 45 of these joints on the album. You're not gonna try to talk about that.
Well, I have a somewhat similar, not as much, but I'm an A&R person for Lil Boozy, Boozy Badass, right? So we're putting his album. We finally got it together, putting his album out in December, and he wanted to put out 27 songs.
Mm-hmm.
And we was like, 27 records, bro? We lost a couple because of samples, but I think it's like down to like 24. And we going for it. It's the new wave, I guess. I don't know.
I guess what it is too, and this is part of it, is that they really only make money on the road. And I'm assuming that they're just looking to, you know, be able to fill a show. You can't get that real money with less than, you know, a 60-minute show, maybe 75 minutes. Probably 75 minutes, closer to 90 minutes to really cake out, to really, like, get your bread. And you sort of need those records, and you need those hot records. And so if he can get 2 smokers out of them 45,
he's good money.
Get a 6-7 month run that could, you know what I'm saying?
Well, he already got one. He has a song on now called "Party with Gucci Man," which is actually doing really, really well. Like, I might
talking about Chris or Boosie.
Yeah, Chris. Okay. I'm talking about Chris right now. Yeah. Okay. So he's already, you know, I mean, that's the thing about Chris. Like, his records do get on the radio. Like, they do, you know. So we'll see. But I just thought it was 45 records was. I had to bring that up because I was like, damn, that's a lot. Just the manpower going into like getting that together and the samples and the mixing.
The fucking label copy. Jesus
Christ. Yeah, the producer agreement. Jesus, my God, the publishing. Oh my.
Yo, so many producers will never see a fucking dime. God bless them. Y'all are never seeing royalty checks, ever.
All you got to do is say you produced it.
Yes, that's what you got.
I want to just talk. You know, we haven't really talked about Black-ish, and I think they're up to episode 3 or 4 now.
Yeah, this week was 3.
3, right? I just wanted to mention. I mean, we talked about the first one with the slavery, did we?
I think we did.
We kind of did. You know, it's been 2 more. I mean, we don't have to get into depth with the you know, the content of shows, but I just like, I mean, they really like are going.
It's great.
It's going to almost to that quote unquote next level. Not, and the show was already great, but this right. These first three have been heavy. You know, they did a whole slavery show, then the second one was a whole postpartum show, yeah. And this third one was about Ruby, you know, getting older and like kind of dealing with your parents aging and yep. maybe not having their, you know, as being as sharp as they were when they were younger. So they're hitting on some really heavy topics. You know, obviously it's still a lot of humor in it, but they're hitting on some really right. heavy topics this season, and I'm just appreciating it, you know?
Right.
And
they're still doing it. The balance is still so great between serious and funny.
Yep.
Especially with the postpartum episode, like there's a really, really, really great balance between like the show, kind of like the episode, where they had the kids watch, what was it?
They watch a speech. No, they watch,
Ferguson and BLM.
Yeah.
So it's like, that could be a really hard line to walk, you know, back in the day. Is what a sitcom would be like. And this week we have a very special episode. Watch it with your family. Episode. You know, like that exactly. whole have exactly. with slow music and shit. And they don't do it like that. So yeah. I appreciate that. But they still hit the right note.
Yep. And obviously they have their characters so down pat now. They're like, you know, they just nail it. And the sidebar, so I saw Kenya Barris, he was on this Houston Merrill show.
Uh-huh.
They do it, you know, I think I've mentioned it before. They have a show that comes on Monday through Friday.
On Vice.
It's basically like a news show. Bouncy is like really funny, but they cover, it's kind of like this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They cover pop culture like across the board, news, sports, music, whatever, right? But he was on there, and this was interesting because I didn't never seen him interviewed before. And, mm-hmm. you know, not surprising, but like Dre is literally him.
I think like, I knew that.
Yeah, no, I mean, but even the way they dress Dre, uh-huh. like, it's literally him. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
you know, he is Dre. Like, he was dressed as Dre with Dre. He had the sneakers on with the jeans and, like, the little hot shirt. Like, and his wife's name is Rainbow.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's his wife's cool. name is Rainbow, and she's mixed. Like, so, and he has six kids. So he's pulling all of the. I didn't know all that background on him either, and he's literally pulling all of this from you know real life experience. And also, I didn't know. Did you know this, Nye? He created America's Top Model.
I did not know that.
Yep, that was his show.
How old would he have been then? How old is Kenya? Isn't Kenya our age?
Yeah, he looked to be no more than early 40s.
Yeah,
he's not old. Not like an old guy, and that's why. Remember, Tyra was on Blackish.
Yeah,
because him and Tyra grew up together.
Oh, okay.
So that character,
okay.
Remember about Dre and the Tyra's yep. how they grew yep. up together. That's yep. literally Kenya and Tyra for real.
Kenya and Tyra, that's very cool. Yeah, okay,
exactly. So it was all the stuff he was saying, and I was like, holy shit! Like this guy just really pulling all this stuff from his life, but you know, you don't know that because he doesn't do. You know, many interviews. He talked
about,
he talked about how he went to the White House Correspondents' Dinner, I guess a couple years ago or whatever, and that's when Donald Trump tweeted, what if there was a show called Whitish? Like, that would be racist.
Everybody would be really offended, yeah.
And he said he ran up on Donald Trump and was like, yo, that tweet you wrote was crazy, my nigga. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And they have a picture of it. Anthony Anderson was like gassing the whole shit up. He said him and Trump was like arguing at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Wow.
So it was like, if you go on YouTube and just pull up, you know, D.C. Samara and Kenya Barris, like, cause it's just like an extended interview. He's a very interesting guy cause he's like a smart guy, but he's like Dre, he's like a nigga. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like he went to Clark. Like he's like a nigga, but he's from LA. It was interesting. It was a good interview. I just wanted to mention that because he really impressed me. Let's talk a little bit about. I want to mention this Black Panther trailer.
This is fucking awesome. Which is the most black thing I've seen in a black ass black Tom. It's fucking amazing.
So. When we get to the trailer in a second, but like Sydney Margaret, friend to the show, who's a huge movie buff. He's like,
and a huge comic book buff.
He goes to Comic Con and all of that. Like, he's deep into it. He came out of office the morning after the trailer. He was like, bro, I'm dead ass gonna buy me like a whole African outfit.
I am too.
He's flying that. He said he's gonna try to fly to LA to the premiere and wear the whole African outfit and go to the premiere.
I'm not mad at Sydney for that. He should absolutely do that. Me, John, his road manager, a couple other people were talking yesterday about how the general public is really not ready for how black people about to show out.
They're not ready.
Like, they're really, and this movie is about to make so much fucking money because you're gonna get the regular Marvel heads, and you're gonna get black folks who don't give a fuck about Marvel or any of that shit, but are going to this movie. You know what I mean? And we going back 2, 3, 4, 5 times.
And Ryan Coogler, and we know Ryan Coogler is gonna make sure the movie's dope. On top of it, it's not gonna be a dud. It's gonna be fly.
I don't know nothing about this comic book shit. Like, nothing. I'm going as a family, okay?
Right.
Load up. We're going to the dining theater. We're going to get good food.
Yep.
We're going to spread out. We get the assigned seating.
Yep. There's
going to be no, I'm holding all these seats in a row. With the pocketbook in the middle, you got like 8 seats. And none of that shit. So, and that's another thing too. Y'all black folks now don't, we're going to have some mixed company now. Don't get too crazy. We doing it all.
And we were also talking about how the concession stand ain't going to make no money because we all bringing food.
We bringing everything.
We bringing all the food.
Yeah. God bless
all Popeyes, the food.
Popeyes finna
be. Oh my God.
Whatever Popeyes is close to a movie theater, if they manage it, don't double that order of chicken.
Exactly.
For that weekend.
Right.
and we're bringing in cups with liquor in it.
Of course.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's going to be...
That's iced tea.
It's Hawaiian punch, bro. Chill. that trailer, man, was just it was so much flyness in that trailer, man. The whole shit with the spaceships, like, hovering and, like, the way they were dressed and, like, the fight scenes and Michael B. Jordan and, like, oh, my God, that shit was unbelievable, man. Like, I can't...
It was dope. I'm excited. I'm excited. Plus, I always, I'm an action movie guy. Like, I love action movies. And once you give me that with black folks, like, I'm straight. I'm good.
Yeah, we lit. We lit. Yeah. We in here. So, yes, I said I wanted to mention that. I wanted to mention Nye because it wasn't really my thing to get involved with, but this whole,
Women boycott Twitter.
No, well, that too. Oh. We can talk about both things. And we can definitely talk about that as well right now. Also, the Me Too hashtag.
Right. So, one kind of followed off the back of the other, right? But they're separate but related. Both things are born out of the Weinstein news, which dominated a large part of the news cycle last week. And the conversations that generated around it, like we were talking about on the show last week about how prevalent, I guess a culture of toxic masculinity, if you want to call it by that phrase, or just like men doing whatever the fuck they want to do, really is prevalent, not just in Hollywood and entertainment, but pretty much in any industry that's a male dominated industry. And it's just how we are as society, right? Like we're largely still, even as we fight against, you know, old fashioned norms and beliefs and stuff we've been socialized for, still as a society we are mostly patriarchal, and there's still not complete parity between men and women. So that conversation was going, and Me Too, actually a black woman started it years ago.
And so it's an old hashtag.
It's an old hashtag, but the white people got hold of it. So there's two conversations happening about Me Too. First, that the hashtag is being used, but second, that the white people got a hold of it and acted like they invented it. And I can't remember which publication or person did it. But that it had actually been started by a black woman years ago. And this happens almost every time a black woman, you know, gets a hashtag like this trending and it starts moving into the mainstream.
Into mainstream.
So that's one conversation about it. But basically, the theory behind it is that men really don't understand how often women are sexually assaulted and don't talk about it. Or how many women they probably know who are sexually assaulted and have never talked about it. And that's one of the things that I was trying to tell a lot of people with the Bill Cosby conversation, when they were like, well, these women went to the room and they did this and they did that. I was like, y'all are right now, there's women who you know who have been assaulted watching you have this conversation, and they're never, and it's women you fuck with. You know what I mean? Like, it's
that are never going to say nothing.
Family. Yes, people in your family. It's people that you're really close to, that you work with, who you really fuck with, who are never going to tell you their story now because they're watching you have this conversation. And, so that's part of it. And, you know, there still seems to be this myth amongst a bunch of people that, you know, assault or rape is like a stranger grabs you and you have to fight them off and punch them and kick them and do all
that
stuff.
In an alleyway or whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, 90% of sexual assault victims and survivors knew their attacker, you know, and the other part of it is, if you want to actually broaden that beyond, first of all, if you want to broaden that beyond assault to over to harassment, that's all of us, like, legit. You know what I mean? And that, I mean, I'm hard pressed to find a grown ass woman who doesn't have a story, even if it's just somebody just come out their mouth crazy to her, like in the supermarket or something. But you know, that's not something that men worry about. And it's like women have almost been conditioned to not even think of it as a thing. Yeah, you don't even think of it as a thing. Like, I shared a story today on Instagram, and I was like, I almost didn't share it because I didn't feel like it was enough of a thing for me to share. But that's part of the problem. It's like, we feel like unless somebody tried to fucking pin you down and attack you or something, that you're just not, oh, he just grabbed your ass. Oh, girl, that ain't no big deal. But it is. You know what I mean? Like, it actually is.
Yeah, yeah.
So Me Too has basically been like, if you post a picture or tell a story and use the hashtag Me Too, or just post a graphic of the hashtag Me Too, maybe people will realize how many women you know that have had this experience, right?
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, this handful over here. It's not just this handful over here. Like, this is something that happens to every woman. And most women don't talk about it because we see how the conversation turns when women do talk about it, you know? So that's the Me Too hashtag. The women boycott Twitter thing. So Rose McGowan, the actress who used to be on Charmed, she
Marilyn Manson.
And you said, weren't they married for a second or something? Or
it might have been. Yeah. It might have been married. Yeah, they
but you're right. She was with Marilyn Manson, very publicly. They were like the rock version of fucking. I believe that Amber and Kanye modeled themselves after Marilyn and Rose.
Yeah, somewhat.
Because Rose used to do that same shit, like wear half naked shit to the awards and do all that stuff. So anyway, Rose actually had a settlement with Harvey for assault or harassment, or one of the two, a long time ago. She settled for like $100,000. I don't know what the terms were. Obviously, there must have been what do you call it?
Like an NDA order.
There must have been no NDA.
Gag order.
Gag order. So she obviously came out vocally when all the other Harvey stuff was coming on, but she's been like ultra vocal. Not only has she been talking about Harvey, She really picked up the mantle in this crusade, and she was going in on like everybody and anybody. She was like, Ben Affleck, you knew about this shit. You do the shit too. This one over here, you do the shit too. You a rapist too. You ain't shit.
She went on a Matt Damon too, I think, right?
Yeah, I think so. So she was just going in on everybody. And Twitter has two levels of suspension. One is they'll suspend you for a few hours or like 12 hours.
That's Twitter jail.
No, it's not Twitter jail anymore. Twitter jail used to be, you tweeted too much and you couldn't tweet anymore, but you could send tweets. Now they fully suspend your account. They don't do Twitter jail anymore. Yeah, it used to be if you tweeted too much in a certain amount of time, you'd end up in Twitter jail. So I don't know what the purpose of that was either. But anyway, but they suspended her account fully for like 8 hours, 12 hours, something like that.
12 hours.
So then all of a sudden, everybody's like, because they said she violated terms of service. And everybody's like, she ain't violating no terms of service. Oh, my God. What even is this? Like, Twitter, you're so good. Because one of the problems with Twitter, and I think we've talked about this before, that people have is that they're not really effective in how they choose what accounts they're going to actually hold to terms of service and which mm-hmm. ones they're not. And there have been a lot of problems with people who get harassed on Twitter by bots and by right-wing followers and racists and stuff mm-hmm. like that, because they employ all kinds of methods. Like, a whole bunch of them will get together and just report an account over and over again when they're the ones fucking with the account, and the other account gets suspended. Like, I can get in a fight with somebody. Yeah, I can get in a fight with somebody, but they corral all the other little bots or right-wing haters or whatever. And if enough people, like, report your account gets suspended or maybe even mm-hmm. shut down. So, you know, a lot of people first come to Twitter like, why are you suspending Rose McGowan? Which terms of service did she violate exactly? But you didn't do it with this person. This person, you know, has been reporting this hate and whatever. Not only did you not suspend this person, the tweet is still up, or they told such and such to go to the gas chamber and hope they can smell a fuck. You know what I mean? So they're like, they're talking, everybody's like fussing at Jack and Twitter.
Is this where the suspend Donald Trump thing spun out of too? Or is that something different?
I haven't seen that one yet, but I've seen that ongoing. Like, at what point?
Yeah. Yeah, this has nothing to do with Rose McGowan.
That's been ongoing. Like, at what point do you suspend Donald Trump? Because he attacks, you know, individual citizens, like, whatever. So mm-hmm. then somehow this phrase Rose Army came out of wherever. And then everybody was like, well, we're going to remove our voices from Twitter for a day so that you can see how it feels without women on this platform. Cause you guys need to do better, blah, blah, blah. So it's like all the white social justice warriors, like, come up with the women boycott Twitter hashtag. And some of us white women were sitting there like, now, first of all, this whole thing didn't even start until, like, it was like late Thursday night, and it was for Friday. So it's like, and then there was some women, there were some non-women of color and black women who were like, yeah, I don't know if this is how I want to do this. Not saying I see where you're going, but for black women especially, the argument was our entire issue usually is that somebody is trying to silence us. So mm-hmm. voluntarily removing our voices from Twitter for a day isn't necessarily how we want to do this. And then there was, and also, where was this actual unity and allyship and call to action when it was our people getting fucking harassed and, mm-hmm. and drugged and, you know, all that stuff on Twitter? Like, where was it then, right? So then the white women are mad, like, oh, the black women are being supportive. We need to all do this together, and we're all women. And, you know, then it becomes like, well, y'all put your race, it's like y'all put your race over gender for the election. We're going to put race over gender today. So a lot of, and my thing was, I get the Twitter boycott, but white feminism is ultra fucking selective. Like, they decide they're going to do some shit when they feel like doing some shit. And a lot of times, like,
you're supposed to just get involved.
And a lot of times they let us do the heavy lifting, whether they realize it or not. They take our ideas and build on them and totally leave us out of the overall equation. Like, it was the same complaint about the women's march. You know, like, it, white women get on board with it and they get so passionate about it. But it's like, okay, black women, we need you to do some stuff, but just not right now. You know, like that type of thing. And so we were just kind of like, all right, y'all go do your shit. We'll be over here. And April, whose last name I can't remember, the same woman who started the Oscar So White hashtag.
Rain of April?
Yeah, Rain of April. But I was trying to remember her actual name and I can't. Mm-hmm. But the same woman who started the Oscar So White hashtag started WOC Affirmation, Women of Color Affirmation. She was like, instead of silencing our voices, let's lift up voices of other women of color that we see doing great shit. Like, let's make it a positive day. So on Friday on Twitter, it was a bunch of black women like shouting other black women out. Like, this one does dope shit. Shout out to this one for doing dope shit. Shout out for this one doing that. I got a couple of shout outs from my threads, you know, and just being kind of like a love fest, and doing things as usual. But Rose is like, and I'm saying this carefully because I don't want to sound the way people sound when they're trying to dismiss people speaking out against, you know, just overall bad behavior from men. But she has really centered her fucking self in this whole shit at this point. Like, herself. Like, there's a t-shirt like that says Rose Army that's for sale. Like, the whole Rose Army thing bothers me. Like, first of all, you aren't the only person to come out about Harry in this time period.
Harvey. Yeah.
Second of all, like, this ain't about you, bitch. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's really not. It's not about just you. And I think motherfuckers have put a battery in her back. Cause even today she went off on Ellen.
She's hot out here now. She's hot in the streets.
Yeah. But even today, like, she went in on Ellen because Ellen was talking about, you know, healthcare and needs for gay and trans people. And she responds on top of that, like, and meanwhile, women are getting their birth control taken away and can't get abortions. And can you just advocate for women in general? And it's like, this is not, no, this is not how this works. You know what I mean? This is kind of like, I hear you, but this is what white women, this is what white hetero women do. Once they get on something, all the marginalized shit is like, well, you know, it has to be about feminism first, but it's a very specific type of feminism. It's like, yeah, I know you got your black shit, but we all have, it's very all lives matter. It's, you know what I mean? But we all have this shit. And I know you have your gay shit, but we have to be women first. And it's like, actually, no, I'm black first. Thanks. I'm black first. Then I'm a woman, you know? So it's just like, that part is a struggle, but that's what was going on this weekend, basically.
Yeah, so, you know, God bless you, Rose, and good luck. And, you know, God bless. Bro's like, yeah, whatever. I want to also mention.
Nah, you know what? I don't want to seem like whatever.
Right.
Because I felt every bit, and I'm not going to go off too much on this because, one, I'm not really qualified to go off too much on this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I definitely felt and understood. I tend to follow really smart and bright women. And they were able to articulate everything they were feeling, like, really easy. You know what I'm saying? And it made sense. This was not some far-fetched shit. And they, you know, and I understood it, man. And honestly, it did lead into the Me Too shit because, like, Alyssa Milano tried to tap onto the Me Too hashtag and I think she tried to, like, take credit for it.
Right. Like, she did.
I saw Bevy basically, like, call out, like, this is bullshit, and then added the person who did start it. But it was just sort of, it's sort of quintessential this shit that it's like, hey, we're all women, and then when you get into that space of we're all women, you're reminded you're a nigga. Like,
yeah, quickly.
With the quickness.
You said this time and time again about gay culture and how every time gay culture is brought up, like, you don't see black people mentioned, it's white gay culture.
And always white gay culture.
But the prominent, you know, part of making parts of gay culture a part of popular culture are from black people.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so it was just mind blowing to watch, and it was mind blowing to see. And then you have Mayim Bialik, you know, do an op-ed piece at the New York Times, and it was just weird, and it was just like, what the fuck are you talking about right now?
She's a hater. She's like, basically saying she's happy that she's not good looking, which is a
hater. Yeah, she's just hating, shorty.
Yeah,
it was just weird, but I'm glad you said what you said, Nan. It was really dope to see our women, you know, feeling not just empowered, but feeling like, yo, we not falling for the banana in the tailpipe, Rose. Get the fuck on.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Gucci Mane wedding. I'll be back in 2 seconds.
Okay. this is probably just going to be me, because Sean, you didn't watch it yet, right?
No.
Right.
But, you know, God bless him, but no.
So last night, BET premiered the main event, which is their Gucci and Keisha, like, 10 episode wedding special. But a couple of things were kind of confusing about it. The first being that they started the series with the live wedding, which to a lot of people seemed very backwards. Like, well, what's the incentive to keep tuning in if the wedding kicks it off? So it's supposed to be like, we see them get married, because yesterday was 10/17. Of course, Gucci needed to get married on 10/17. Duh.
What was the significance of that date?
So Gucci's label, Gucci's group is 10/17.
Okay.
And it's the number comes from his grandfather's address when he was a kid in the house that he lived. It was like 10/17, whatever street.
Okay.
And Gucci's group is 10, Gucci's label is like 10, or imprint or whatever, it's like 10/17 Squad or 10/17 Entertainment or 10/17 something. So, like, everything with him is 10/17.
Okay.
So he needed to get married on 10/17. So, and the series is going to now go back and follow really Keisha leading up, like her planning leading up to the wedding, like, you know, over the top requests and only giving the wedding planner 3 months and her bridesmaids fighting and, you know, all that type of shit. So, the thing about the wedding itself though, and I was really kind of, is excited the right word? I was curious to watch it, but the thing about the wedding itself, so this is at 10 p.m. Eastern, mm-hmm. but it's a live wedding. And as we're all watching, the music feels a little choppy. There doesn't seem to be a lot of emotion. We didn't really get, it felt like we didn't really get a lot of the ceremony. Like it was an hour special, but they only spent like maybe 20 minutes on the actual ceremony. Like they did some quote unquote arrivals to the wedding and then they did the ceremony itself, but it wasn't even like, it wasn't even like Yandy and Mendeecy. Like it wasn't a full.
No, not at all.
It wasn't a full thing. Like we didn't see people singing. We didn't see this, you know, all that other type of stuff. And the space felt very small for filming, right? Because the ceremony was in one room, and I guess they were at the Four Seasons in Miami. Ceremony's in one room, reception's in another room. We're gonna see the reception in the show. But the ceremony was like a really tight space, and even just the layout for it was like really tight for filming. Mm-hmm. And there just didn't seem to be a lot of emotion. So even though I was like, what's up with Keisha? It felt very awkward. It felt dry. Like, wasn't nobody singing? You know, even the music, like they kept changing the song for all the people walking in, and that felt awkward. Like, everything was just weird. So I was watching this, and especially when Keisha wasn't crying, she didn't really seem super anything emotional. It's like she was really just focused on like giving face, and I'm like, all y'all niggas been through and like you're not emotional for the wedding. So I was like, I bet this wedding was actually earlier today. Let me see what happened. So I went back, and a couple people were like, I think they're already married, I think this and that. So I went back and remembered that when their invites went out, a bunch of people had posted pictures of them because they were so gorgeous. And a couple of blogs blurred out the details, but I found Rick Ross's picture, and he left all that shit clear as day. The wedding was at 4:00. So they had and I also remembered that Keisha posted a picture of herself in her dress before she showed up on camera, on screen, which I was like, nobody does that. And I'd seen a picture with Christian Combs, Justin Combs.
Oh, yeah, I saw that
and
picture.
And Gucci. Mm-hmm. And that was before, that was like an hour before the show started. And they were like, it looked like they were at the reception, right?
Yeah, it looked like they Gucci had like, he had just had a vest on and no tie. Like they had
no tie. They were chilling.
Loose and relaxed, exactly.
Exactly. So it looked like they had the wedding. They did the whole fucking reception. Maybe chilled for a minute, redid makeup, got back dressed, ate a little something, and then did this live for BET. But it explains so much because BET had set up like a whole red carpet situation, but we didn't really get a lot of people for that, right? But then they also already had like a bunch of taped testimonies from people inside the wedding that they were able to like shoot through. So I think they must have edited those real quick and threw them out there. And it also just explained why there didn't seem to be a lot of emotion popping up, you know, because y'all did this show already. And you tired. Like, if you got married at 4:00, you started your day at fucking like hair, makeup, getting dressed, all that shit. Like they've been up for, it's been a long day.
Yeah.
And this is 10 o'clock.
They might have been up actually all night the night before, barely got any.
Yeah, because they had like a big old lavish rehearsal dinner and everything.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that part could have been better done because everything I saw overall, people were completely underwhelmed. People felt like they couldn't really see what everything looked like. And maybe that was on purpose because they want us to watch the show to see Keisha's extravagance. But you know, you keep hearing all this stuff is $500,000 wedding and there's all these diamonds and it's all this and it's all this that. And you feel like you don't really see that.
And also that was the other thing that was strange. I know like, you know, Gucci, you know, was adamant about getting married on 10/17 because that's his, you know, name of his company. And
yeah, that's what I just got.
That's his thing. So my point, so like, it was just, it's just weird that now the show starts now.
Yeah.
Like they've already given us the ending of the show, which is the wedding. And now they're going to start this show, you know, about leading up to this wedding that we've already seen. It's like, it's, it's bugged out. And I also know that Gucci kind of did this more for her. I mean, BT was...
Yeah, this is clearly a vehicle for her.
Yes. Gucci was on the... I think BT was on the impression that they were going to get, you know, kind of, like you said, like a Yandy Mendeecees was, like, going to see both sides and everything. And once Gucci got this paperwork stuff signed, he was like, nah, this is for her. Like, don't, y'all not following me around doing shit, you know?
Right, so
He makes an occasional appearance on the show, but like you said, the show is based around her and her, you know, her celebrity friends. I'm using air quotes. And it's also going to be a marketing tool for her makeup, line.
You know, and they definitely showed when she was getting dressed. They definitely ran a camera over all that Pure cosmetics. I was like, okay, that's good product placement.
I saw a great product placement. So, hey, look, God bless them. You know what I'm saying? I wish them well. There's already controversy because apparently, not apparently, but she has three children that weren't at the wedding and a sister that also wasn't at the wedding. And they, I think they all, I don't know if the sister lives in Jamaica, the three children do.
Sister and Gucci has a son. I don't think his son was there either.
Yeah, I don't believe his son was there. Did they show his mom?
I mean, that's the thing. They didn't really show a lot of anybody. Yeah. Not really. You know, we didn't really see all that. So I don't know.
And also, look, you know, you never know with celebrity, almost again, celebrities, air quotes, who's really friends and not. And who knows?
Right.
But I'm just like, Gucci's friends with Big Sean like that? Like really? Like, right. I mean, maybe, but like, I mean, okay, Rick Ross, I kind of get it.
I mean, like, he shouts out, Ross shouts out in his book.
But he's friends with, like, Yachty? Like, really? Like,
yeah, like, Yachty's how many like people
18 years old. He's a child.
I think some of it was probably definitely.
Yeah, it was.
It was, like, the network maybe wanting some star power. But I did hear at the guest that it was only, like, 200 people. It was like 100 guests plus one. I don't know. I guess we'll see. I guess that's part of what we gotta
watch. You know, I'll say, you know, I'm happy for him and her.
I am happy for them.
Yeah,
they seem to be really, really like in a great space, you know, and it's really dope to see a man, you know, sort of evolve into just being a better person. Like, that's dope to me, you know, and just as a black man, like, he's of a certain age, you know, he's, you know, like our age, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He's not like a young man.
Yeah.
And so it's really dope to see that and see somebody really embracing and grasping that second chance at, you know, life and living his best life. And that's dope. You know, in terms of, I'm not in the business of disparaging, you know, other folks. But when I heard that it was the wedding first, I honestly, man, I just sort of checked out.
Yeah.
Absolutely no build up for me. The build up is in sort of masterfully weaving a story together to have an ending, right? Like, because at the end of the day, this is still entertainment, right? It's still, there are still sort of very traditional things that people want to see. And so to work backwards from that, like, there is no show. Like, if you watch Bridezilla's, you don't watch the wedding
at the end and go back. I mean, at the beginning.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? At the beginning and then go back. So, you know, look, BT, I will say this. BT has been very, very starved for content.
Yeah.
And they have been very eager for content, and that's probably why they just took it on the chin. I find it very difficult to believe that no one thought to have contractual obligations to be able to follow the star of the show. People are turning in to see Gucci. I mean, look, God bless Keisha. She's a, you know, she's famous in her own right, but she's not, I got a show on BET on my own. Famous.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, you know, look, I don't, you know, no ill will toward the people who did this. God bless them. They look like they happy and didn't compromise their wedding. They didn't, you know, well, it seems like they didn't compromise their wedding. I'm not quite sure, but God bless them.
Right.
Yeah. I want to mention this. You read this story about this Canadian couple that was, well, one Canadian and American couple that was released by the Taliban. Did you read this story?
Yeah, I mean, I know a little bit about it. I didn't read the whole thing.
So last week or so, Joshua Boyle and his wife's name is Caitlin Coleman. they have three children. They were freed from the Taliban after 5 years of captivity. They were captured hiking in Afghanistan. So already I'm like, all right, well, what's really good?
Yeah, like, they were too close to the border or something like that.
Yeah, like, but I'm already like, okay, that's okay. What's really good?
They weren't, that? They weren't exactly backpacking.
That's what I'm saying.
What they were doing, no, they specifically said it because I read there was a couple of, the thing about this is that it's still very vague. So there were a couple of articles that really sort of dove into it. Like CNN had an article, Washington Post had an article when I was looking this up. And they talked about this particular village that they were in had no NGOs, meaning they had no nonprofits. There was nobody really there sort of working. It was just sort of under this rule of the Taliban. You know, a lot of these provinces and locations are really remote and they're sort of lawless. It's really not a central government, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's just do so, whatever.
So the story was that they were there sort of helping these villages. Now, we know how understanding culture is not everyone's forte.
Yeah.
Not really understanding or I should say trying to understand that you can't do certain things. You can't dress certain ways. Mm-hmm. These things are really, really frowned upon. So I say that to say they were out there, and I'm using air quotes, helping the village.
Yes. That's what they say.
That's what they say. I think that might have been what they were doing. I don't necessarily know that that was that that what they were doing in those capacities of helping this village, again with air quotes, was not against religious and cultural balances, rules of where they were.
Yes. So okay. So they got captured 5 years ago, taken into captivity. Now at the time they had no children.
She was pregnant at the time they got captured.
Oh, with the first one?
Yes.
Okay. They since then had two more children. No, excuse me, one more child, and she's pregnant now with the third. And so, wait, no, wait, I'm lying. They have three. They have three children. Excuse me.
Raising kids in captivity.
Yeah, exactly. So they having kids, raising kids in captivity. Now this is where it gets even murkier because. First of all, he's claiming that the Taliban raped his wife and that they had another child that died.
No.
The Taliban is...
No, hold on now. Because this shit gets deep.
He didn't say
there was articles that said that
the baby got killed.
Yes. There was another article, the Washington Post article specified that the baby was killed. And that the baby was like ordered to be killed.
Yeah. But the Taliban folks is saying, number one, no, we did not rape that lady. And number two, the child died in a miscarriage that they're not taking any onus, any credit for killing a baby. They's like, nah, that child died in a miscarriage. It's not, we didn't do that. Then it gets even murkier because when they decided to let them go, the husband was adamant about not boarding a U.S. plane. He was like, I'm only going to Canada. I'm not going to the States. For some reason, he never really specified why. He was adamant. So he didn't get on the U.S.
So you think there might have been some shit waiting for him back here?
Maybe, because he was adamant. And now they're in Canada now, but it looks like that Canada's not going to let them stay. And he's very nervous now about coming back to the States. Again, well,
they were from Canada.
Well, no, but she's American. The wife is American birth. Well, he's from Canada.
Yeah. His was not going to happen. He's definitely not going to come back here. I don't think they're letting him. Here's my one. I'm not even sure that Canada didn't pay to have those people released, which is like the biggest fucking no-no with the Western countries, right? Like we're not negotiating with terrorists. We're not paying ransoms, none of that sort of shit. They never specified how they were you know, how they got away. So, you know, did they send in special forces to get them? Did they have a location? I have no, that's what I'm saying. This story is so vague.
Yeah, it's very, it's very under the radar. It's like wild low.
It's because of Trump, you know, and all the other shit that's going on. It's just kind of like you said, just kind of flew under the radar.
But not even so much as under the radar, because listen, Washington Post is a legitimate outlet.
True. Like, this is, and then Today Show reported on it and stuff.
Yeah, like, more like there hasn't. I mean, yes, it got news reporting, but there hasn't been chatter.
Yes, there hasn't been chatter, and I think that. I don't know. You know, I don't know. Listen, if I'm the Border Patrol, yeah, dude, you got to go into the room. I'm not just allowing you to come back here 5 years. I don't know what that means. I don't.
Yeah.
No, that's real. That's right. You could come back here and be like motherfucking Brody from Homeland and shit.
Yeah. So I'm kind of like, I don't really know that you're just going to, walk back home and everything is going to be cool because. And, you know, look, I don't even know if this was some, you know, person. Maybe it's going under the radar. I'm not completely well-versed in shit, but, like, it was this dude out there scouting to do some other shit?
Yeah, was he out there moving poppy? You know,
was he operating for a government official? I don't know. Yeah. I have no idea.
Yeah. One little interesting tidbit I read that I need to follow up on, but I can believe, is that when they were told that Trump was the president, they thought that the captives were fucking with him.
Yeah, I saw that too. They said he thought it was a joke. He was like, "Nah, stop playing for real."
But it was the first thing that stood out to me was them having children.
Yeah,
and it just
yeah, like wild kids. Like that's my thing too. I was like, how do you got kids?
Like, he claims he said because the clock was ticking and they always wanted to have a big family.
He said, look, who are me to judge, right? Like, you're in captivity. Yeah. I don't know what's going through your mind. Maybe you resigned the fact that you're never coming home and this is going to be the life for the rest of your life. He said that there was, that his wife, then he said that his wife was raped because he was given an order and he didn't take the order or didn't do something with the order. And I'm like, well, what fucking order was this? That's what I'm saying, man. It's so vague. Like, I can't think of what you would have told me to do that would have allowed me to be frozen or stand on some moral soapbox, and my wife ended up getting raped.
To get your wife, exactly.
Yeah, like what are we doing here? What are we talking about?
Yeah.
I don't, that whole, I'm not getting on the U.S. plane. Look, motherfucker, I'm getting on the first thing smoking, motherfucker. I don't care where it's going. You take me anywhere.
As long as we get out of here.
You take me anywhere but where I am right now.
Anywhere.
Where? I'm gone.
Anywhere.
I'm gone.
And the U.S., like, my nigga, the U.S. is that, listen, U.S. has a lot of shit going on, okay?
Yeah.
But I'm not getting on the U.S. plane? Shit.
Yeah, I'm out of here. Also, he says that they staying with his parents right now in Smith Falls, Ontario. All five of them are sleeping in a small bedroom. And the children are still eating off the floor because they're so traumatized.
Because they
don't
know anything.
They're so used to doing, I guess, the captivity. Yeah. So this story, I just,
well, this is, like, have you got, did you guys ever see the movie Room? It was, I think it won a couple of Oscars a couple of years ago.
What's it called? Rome?
Room. Like, literally, mm-hmm. The word room. Like,
oh,
that room,
Is that the one they dubbed with the woman and her daughter was in the room? The, room? I never
the
saw
woman,
that.
The woman and her son, the woman and her son, the woman had been kidnapped as a teenager. She had a son. I want to say her son was like six, seven, something like that. But she had raised her son, like the guy who kidnapped her had her in his woodshed in the back, where she turned into like a little kind of apartment, like a little kitchenette, little whatever. And in order to kind of keep her son with a healthy mindset, like they called it room, as though, like, the way you say my house or the way you say the world, like they called it room, like it was a place. Mm. And, when she finally escaped, like, she, and I don't want to give the whole movie away because it's actually a really great movie and I want to say it's based on a true story. When they finally escaped, the kid was so used to, like you said, like certain things, like he wasn't good with eating. His immune system was shit. Mm. He had never been in natural light. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like little stuff like that. Like, they had to really hold him in the hospital for a really long time. He had to wear like these sunglasses for a long time to get adjusted to the light. He wasn't socialized. TV was freaking him out. You know, it was just like all kind of little stuff like that.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just thought this was a really interesting, you know, story. I want to kind of keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
Some more information comes out. Let's talk a little bit about, well, I got want to mention, my Auntie Ayama had to, wrap up to the, men being sexually abused, portion of the season. It was, you know, kind of more the same. She kind of made a couple little breakthroughs. It wasn't anything super crazy. I mean, the guys definitely seemed to kind of, some of them seemed to kind of come to terms with what happened. It seemed like she kind of helped them out, you know, a lot of them in a way. Like, they definitely were more comfortable.
I agree.
With
I wonder how many days they were actually there, though. And, I mean, I've said this before with Ayala. I know there have been instances where we've actually seen them offer long-term help and counseling to people on air. Mm-hmm. But I do really hope that, especially in these cases of this kind of long-standing trauma, there's some kind of follow-up offered.
Yeah.
Because that's hard. It's one thing when you're off in this beautiful house in the woods and in nature.
On the water
in
and
a
all
controlled,
that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. In a controlled environment with other people who have shared experience, and you're there with people who are determined to understand and help you. Mm-hmm. It's another thing when you have to go back out in the world with your family who want to be like, you know, Uncle Julia ain't do that shit to you. Don't nobody care. He did. Why are you tripping on? Yeah, you know, like that type of thing. And then you have to deal with that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, because it seemed like she made some breakthroughs and the guys were open to, you know, trying to get some help and trying to listen and learn. So, you know, it turned out to be a pretty nice, episode, you know, kind of uplifting episode by the end. Just real quick, also want to mention this thing about Melania Trump. So apparently, the rumor on social media today was that Donald Trump was speaking, to the press before, I guess, boarding a plane into the White
House. Yeah, I think it was actually yesterday, because I saw the joke the first time yesterday and I ignored it, but today I was like, wait, that might be true.
Okay, yeah, and then people were saying that, people started looking closely and saying that doesn't look like Melania. It looks like a body double. And then
because the person had on Melania
like
had on,
fake nose.
Well, I've been calling her Maybe Lanya. Maybe Lanya had on a trench coat,
mm-hmm.
like buttoned all the way up to the top with belt on.
Glasses.
And on these big old sunglasses.
And it was cloudy and shit.
And like the hair, I mean, it very much.
The hair was way down, like way.
The way hair was way down. So way definitely down, looked like it could have, and like I was watching, even her mannerisms, like, it does seem like that person was doing a lot more head nodding, being a lot more responsive
to
him than usual. And he even said something at one point, like, and my wife, Melania, who's right here, you know, like that type of thing. So I don't know, but like, if you look closely, it does look like a prosthetic nose. It definitely looks like a wig. I wouldn't put, like, that family's so fucking crazy. I wouldn't put it past them.
I wouldn't put
at all.
Shit past them. And I think, you know, if this did happen, Melania's just at her wit's end. She hates this dude. She don't want to be around him no more. And so she's like, yo, get a body.
Job. Dope. I think she hates this whole, like,
she
Melania.
She hates everything. And people are not talking about it, but they didn't move to D.C. Remember that other shit was talking about this year, they was supposed to move to D.C. and Barron was going to go to school in D.C. They said here.
Oh, is she back in New York?
She never left.
She did. She was there all summer.
Well, off and on. Popping
no, she
out.
Moved there in the summer, Jeff.
I don't think he's going to school in D.C. I think they're still here.
Well,
in
that's
New York.
The thing. Maybe now that it's the fall, she came up. But she moved there. They moved there in June.
Oh, I thought she was just coming down. I thought she was just coming down with stuff that she had to do.
No, that was the move. And she actually posted pictures about how she was excited about decorating, you know, the East Wing and all that. That's when she started being with him more. They moved there in June. But I don't, she's been like one of the most low key first ladies that I remember. I mean, not that I really remember. Not that I only remember Barbara and Hillary and
Michelle.
You know, Michelle and Laura. But, like, I don't remember there ever being any of them being, like, this just quiet and just out of the way.
Well, all of the ones you just mentioned, blatantly lived in the White House. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't no way around the fact that they lived in the White House and they were married to their husband and they were involved in everything.
They also took up a cause and had an agenda.
Yes.
And Melania had
something
too,
that they aligned.
Something to
She's
do.
Taken up cyberbullying, but she hasn't actually laid out a platform.
Well, she hasn't even done that with her husband. So, I mean,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, they haven't hosted a state dinner yet.
No, they haven't
done anything. None of the social stuff. Nothing's happened.
Nothing. Like, no Easter egg hunt. Like, nothing.
They did the Easter egg hunt. They changed it. I want to say it was, first of all, the whitest shit I've ever seen. And it wasn't as big of a press event as it's been in the past.
I wonder if they're going to do the Halloween shit.
Oh, I don't know. I just think Melania don't want to do any of this shit. Like not liking Trump aside, the pressures of being first lady, like, you got to pick out all kinds of China patterns. Like, it's like, I mean, I think we've all seen it in Scandal, but it's real. Like, you got to pick out China patterns and flowers and what cookies you going to bake and what's the menu going to, like, you're the social coordinator of the fucking White House. And, like, she just never, like, she was never meant to be a public facing person on this level.
I hate all of them. I hate all of them. I hate everybody.
It's bad. I think we lost Jeff. Yeah.
Nah, I just hate everybody. I'm so, you know, look, man, I wake up every day with the thought and the idea, like, what the fuck is happening now? Like,
you know. It's so much. Like, think about it.
What happened while I was asleep?
The Vegas shooting was 2 weeks ago. We've already stopped talking about gun control.
Not even that. Like, he hasn't, like, even mentioned, you know, there were four soldiers killed.
And now that he mentioned it, he made it about him. No, he has now, but he made it about him.
Yeah, of course he does. So I can't.
There's been the fires out in wine country. Like, the death toll is higher than Puerto Rico right now. He ain't mentioned that shit. Like, it's just, we were talking, Jeff, about how crazy the news cycle is every day in the era of Trump. Like, the Trump fatigue is so real, and every day is just something else with this motherfucker. Like, dog, what the hell?
And it's only 9 months in. Like, he's 3 months from a year, and this thing is already, it's already just like, my dude. Now I'm sure you already mentioned the stuff with him lying about the, calling the family.
Well, we kind of touched on that. He was talking about how it took him so long to say something about the soldiers. So,
and the then thing he is called that him.
These four soldiers got killed in a botched mission.
Yeah, in Niger.
It was one of Trump's first missions, but it was a botched mission.
Mm-hmm.
People are saying this should technically be his Benghazi, but we all know that it's not going to get nearly the same attention and traction as Hillary did with Benghazi. But anyway, and Trump just, like, Daz ain't say shit about it. Like, nothing. Like, not a mention, not a whatever. And when he was asked about it at a press conference, like, literally he was simply asked, why haven't you said anything about these soldiers? Do you have anything to say about them? And his response was about contacting the families of the soldiers. Mm-hmm. So instead of saying, oh yeah, I want to acknowledge blah, 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 he was like, well, you know, I'll contact the families when I feel appropriate, blah, 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 you know, whatever. And then he was like, you know, it's the hardest call I have to make, and other presidents, Obama, most of the other presidents, they didn't call families. And everybody's like, what? What do you mean they didn't call families? Like, now you're making, like, you're the only president to ever call families.
Ever do it, yeah.
So then that became a thing. So then, of course, the very next day, then somebody called him on the carpet for it later and was like, who told you Obama never called soldiers? He was like,
somebody told
me that. Maybe he did. Maybe he
didn't.
That's
what I heard.
That's what somebody told me. I only know what the generals tell me. So then, of course, the very next day, he has to actually go about calling these people. And one of the soldiers is black, and he calls the wife. The wife is on her way to meet the plane at the airport, bringing his body back. And this particular person was left. He was left behind when he was killed. I think they had to, like, go retrieve his body, like, days later or something crazy like that. So she was going to meet the plane, bringing his body back. Her congresswoman is in the car with her when Trump calls.
Yep.
The congresswoman overhears the call. Right.
No, they put on speakerphone.
So, yeah, so Trump says something to her to the nature of, well, you know, he knew what he was signing up for. but it's a tragedy. It's a shame, you know, or something like that. But the, he knew what he was signing up for. Like,
and he only, and not, that's horrific. And he only spoke to the woman for 5 minutes.
Right.
5 minutes. Like basically, like, you knew what you signed up for, but it's, it still kind of hurts. And hey, look, you know, good luck.
Right. Right.
And Congresswoman Frederica Wilson, who's from Miami-Dade County, where this this cat was from, the David was from, she said, she's a black woman. She said that she asked them to hand her the phone. They take it off speaker and hand me the phone because she said she was literally going to curse Trump out.
Right.
And he hung up. Like, she was about to go in. Like, who the fuck is he talking to? Like, right. Go hammer, but he hung up the phone. Now, of course, Trump is, and this, Representative Wilson has been on the new, several news channels saying that, you know, recounting her story and blacking out on anybody who tried to act like it didn't happen.
Right.
And then, and now Trump is, of course, saying it didn't happen.
Yeah, he's like, he has proof. And the thing is that this is how stupid Trump is. All Trump is saying is, I didn't say what she said I said. I didn't say what she said I said. Do you really even know what she said you said? Like, you don't, like, you don't actually even, I don't, the man just lies. The man just lies. And he's like, and I have proof. What proof do you have? Play the tape. None. If you got tapes, run the tapes back. And somebody was saying this on MSNBC tonight that it is a, well, there's two things happening. First of all, Trump supporters are now attacking, you know, the person who's trying to defend a dead military veteran instead of actually calling Trump on the carpet because y'all are fucking racist assholes. And it's not, and it's never actually about the military, but whatever. But secondly, you know, on MSNBC, they were like, the fundamental problem here is that whenever Trump says something and somebody says something else, we do not believe our president by default.
At all.
Like, yeah, no, you're lying. And that's a problem. It's a problem when every time your president says something,
mm-hmm.
The world, Craig, is like,
he lying.
Yeah, you lying. And if you're not lying, you're at minimum exaggerating the fuck out of whatever
you're fudging shit.
Yeah.
What you think about this, bro?
I mean, I got nothing, man. Like, I got nothing. Like, it's disheartening. The worst thing about this entire presidency is the lack of opposition. Like, the lack of people challenging him and the lack of people. If there was the third of the gumption that they had to challenge everything with Obama, it would be a totally different presidency.
Yeah.
Like, the way, like, no one says anything. It's right. Like,
they just let it ride.
Like, they just let it ride. And you know why? Because everyone, you know, it's like, either, to me, either they agree with him and his tactics, or they're so afraid of being on the outskirts. They're so afraid of, you know, being on the wrong side of his pettiness that they just won't say shit. And either way, it just leaves so many people exposed. It's terrible, man. It's wildly demoralizing. Like, it's insane. This guy is just incredibly unqualified and unfit to do anything, man.
He's anything
to do anything. And he's not this, like, I'm looking at this guy, like, he's just going, he doesn't know shit from Shinola right now.
Not at all. Yo, he don't know whether to scratch his ass, scratch his nose or pick his ass. Well, I want to say one thing before you say something, Jeffrey. Somebody gave a perfect quote. I think this is a perfect quote for Trump and his incompetency. He doesn't know how to lead. He only knows how to fight. And this is why they can't get anything. And that actually is indicative of the whole GOP. They can't get anything done. They only know how to oppose, you know?
Yep. Party exactly. No. Like the other day, that this is just to show back to your point about him not knowing shit when he was out there with Mitch O'Connell, which is a fucking joke. So somebody asked a question about a tax code question, like, you know, a question that needed somebody who understood what they're talking about. Yeah. Like, I can't remember the exact question, but like they said, you know, something like, so with the tax code, blah, 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 President Trump, what are you going to do about blase, blase, blase? Yo, your man literally stood there, looked at Mitch O'Connell and was like, you answer that. Cause it was like, I don't know what the hell. I didn't know what this guy asked me.
No idea.
Like, no idea. Like, this shit, like you said, I mean, you know, we've talked about this on the show many times. We always say we're going to not talk about Trump, but like, it's at the point now, it's so demoralizing. Like, literally, like, in the morning, Yo, I wake up every morning and I check the news because I'm like, yo, what did this dude do last night or early this morning? Like, is some shit set off? Like, did he shoot a bomb at somebody?
Right.
Did he start a war? Like, I don't know what the fuck I'm waking up. Every morning, I do not have any idea on what I'm waking up to with this dude.
And we got this nigga at maybe the worst possible time in the history of the world. I mean, the fucking natural disasters, the fucking fires, hurricanes, you know, all kind of shit
mudslides, earthquake, all kind of shit is going on.
Yeah, all kind of shit going on right and left, and we got your ass. You know what I mean? Like, we got your ass. He's going to die. Everybody's going to motherfucking die.
Worried about playing golf. It's a horrible man. It's a horrible
fat ass.
He has spent an entire third, a full, if I'm not mistaken, he has spent a full, almost a full third of his presidency at one of his properties.
Yeah, playing golf and hanging out, chilling. He'd be taking off on Thursdays. Like, he's out of here tomorrow. No matter what's going on, he's out of here. I want to wrap up the show, talk just a little bit about Colin Kaepernick filing for collusion against him from the NFL owners. You know, so obviously we covered the story about Colin Kaepernick being out of the league now for this will be a second season out of the league. You know, not due to any physical injury, not due to he didn't have a great record in San Francisco, but the team wasn't good. You know, he actually played a decent season, had decent stats, enough to be somewhere. You know, it's because an uproar, the players kneeling, and, you know, again, back to Trump, his ass getting involved and making it about the flag and everything. So Colin hasn't spoken, still focused, hasn't done interviews, but this week passed, a few days ago, he filed a collusion claim against the NFL, saying that they colluded to keep him out of the league and obviously out of being able to earn a living. You know, we've got to see where this whole thing is going to go, but it's an interesting ploy. You know, I mean, he's.
Do you think he has a case?
Well, this is the thing. To file this type of claim, I'm hoping he must have some type of evidence, because you can't. No matter how bad it is that blatant it is, rather, that he's been you know, colluded against, you can't file collusion just based on hearsay.
Well, true,
or like people just saying like, "Yeah, I'm better than him." It's not enough of a case.
Right.
He has to have some type of evidence of emails, trail.
I don't know though, because I saw a lawyer say that the thing about collusion is that it's one of those things that's kind of like defamation. Is it like defamation? But it's one of those things where it's kind of like it's up to the judge to decide, or whoever is actually handling the case to decide if there's evidence of the collusion. So it could even be, it's possible that even just the simple fact that, you know, none of the teams would meet with him, or I think there were even some instances where, I think there were a couple of instances, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, where a coach wanted him, but the owner said no. You know, a couple of things like that.
Yeah,
I think those kind of situations might in and of themselves show a pattern.
Yeah.
That suggests. And now, you know, with owners coming out so strongly in conversations of the whole take a kneel thing, they're solidifying like their point that it wasn't about his talent, that it was about their point of view of his, you know, freedom to exercise his First Amendment right. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And I was actually kind of surprised that he took this road, because it seemed almost like he was in a place of, you know, whatever the fuck is going to be, I made my choice, I'm willing to stick by that. Not saying that he shouldn't sue, because he definitely is being blocked out of the NFL. But I think I was just kind of surprised that he's now like, okay, you know what? Let me fucking, you know, jump into this way.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, like you said, it's going to be a very, very interesting case. You know, I hope he gets something out of it. You know, apparently, I didn't realize this, but he's been living in New York. Because
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's here with Nessa. Apparently, I read there was a piece in, I think the sports magazine, The Undefeated, or Sports Illustrated, one or two, they live in Harlem. He lives uptown.
I have no idea.
Yeah, yeah, he lives uptown. He goes out to New Jersey every morning, very early, like 4 or 5 in the morning, and trains, you know, before, out of like a high school field out there before they start school. You know, Ness is obviously on the radio here in New York. And then he goes, when he comes back, and he goes about like doing his public service work. And as a matter of fact, there's a picture, that was put out maybe about a week and a half ago. I don't know if you saw it, of him, and like he had a dashiki on with a bunch of kids around him.
Yep.
Yeah, that was in Harlem. He went to he went to a school and gave like $25,000, you know, to get equipment and stuff for the kids. So apparently, like, he takes Uber, so he's low key. You know what I'm saying? So he's just taking like a little regular Uber car, so you don't really know who's in the car. But he's, you know, he's around the city. They're not partying, but
right.
He's around the city doing, you know, community work, you know, and staying in shape. So I'm
staying in condition and shape. I mean, exactly. It's gonna be hard for him when you really love something so much.
Yeah, and he's only 29. He's nice, still young. He's still healthy. He's never had a major injury. You know what I'm saying? So he's like, yo, and I'm better than these dudes, at least to be a backup. Like, come on.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah. One last shout out before we wrap up. This cat, Voodoo Ray passed away, who I didn't know actually. I keep seeing everybody.
He was probably like the dance and party scene here in New York.
The dancing kids. Yeah. Yeah, but he passed away, looks like suddenly. He was a fairly young guy. DJ Stretch Armstrong and some other people posted pictures of him at a party they were together at, like, last Sunday. So, like, he was, you know, it was a very sudden death. I don't know what the cause was, but, he, you know, I just wanted to kind of give love to him for being part of the New York club scene. Again, I don't remember meeting him before, but he was definitely loved by many people here, and so I wanted to just give him a little shout out. And that is kind of it. You got anything else before we go?
I don't think so. I think I'm good.
Okay, cool. Bro had to jump on a call. He had to go make some money. So we're going to wrap up.
We're not mad at that.
Yeah, we're not mad at that at all. So we're going to wrap up, and we will see you next week.
Bye, y'all. Uh-oh.
Cool.
Hold on.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got 3 ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @Pop Life Podcast. Talk to you next week.